So the fire department.
You can, after you get to Tahoe from San Francisco, just take a right and go to Las Vegas. High speed rail, right?
Which are your most concerned with?
Well, making a left.
Make a left, lot more.
So we really want to hang it on. So is there any way to hang it on and play it?
All of them were bad.
We did that.
All right, the lawyer's here. Now we can start.
Yes. They did. I mean, literally had a fatality on the side.
Or you just put a green light in until they get the opposite. And then you blink it red, and you know, red left turn.
So it's the school buses or the fire department. That's basically it.
Yeah, school buses and fire department and residents, but the two main things.
Right. Let's get this party started. All right, now the lawyer's here and the press is here.
Yeah, I've only got 20.
Jason's going to speak to that. I mean,
Why don't we get started, everybody? I call to order the meeting of the May 14th CAPO Planning Organization. We're pleased to make reasonable accommodations for members of the public who are disabled and wish to attend the meeting. If you know somebody or you're one of those people, contact Patrick Pittenger at 775-887-2355 as soon as possible. Requests are required prior to 12 o'clock p.m., 2 days before the next meeting. For more information regarding any of the items listed on the agenda, please contact also Patrick Pittenger, Transportation Manager, 887-2355. And the agenda and all supporting material is posted on the CAMPO website, www.carsonareampo.com, or is available upon request at 3505 Buddeye Way, Carson City, 89701. Kathy, can we have the roll call and determination of a quorum?
Chairperson Mallory?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Vieiro?
Here.
Member Bonkowski?
Here.
Member Erb?
Here.
Member McKenna?
Here.
Member McQuarrie?
Here.
Member Smolenski?
Here.
Ex officio Member Van Havel?
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you, Kathy. The next item on the agenda is public comment. This is a time the public who might want to wish to address the MPO can approach the podium and speak on matters related to the MPO. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person per topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chair to calendar the matter for a future MPO meeting. No action may be taken upon a matter raised under this item of the agenda until the matter itself has been specifically included on an agenda as an item upon which action may be taken at a future meeting. Are there any public comment?
If I may, sir.
Patrick.
I just want to note, and she can decide whether she wants to make a comment or not, but I want to just tell you that the Federal Highway Administration Division, Nevada Division, has a new planning and research manager who's going to be working with all the MPOs in the state, including CAMPO. And she just started. She was previously with the Washoe RTC. And she just started here at FHWA, and she's joined us tonight, Christina Leach. And there she is. And she doesn't have to say anything, but I just wanted to let you know that she's here, and we're happy to be working with her.
Thank you, Patrick. Christina, would you like to share anything from the podium?
Yes, it's my second week on the job, but I just wanted to thank you guys for doing this, and I'm excited to be involved with everything that you're doing and hoping to attend the meetings on a pretty regular basis.
Well, thank you, Christina. Yeah, welcome aboard.
Thanks.
Any other public comment from anybody in the audience? Any comment from any members of the board? There's no minutes this meeting, Kathy?
No, there was no March CAMPO meeting.
Okay.
So there's a little confusion there, I think.
Let's go to the agenda management notice. Patrick?
No changes.
Okay, let's go to disclosures. Any member of the MPO board wish to explain any contact with the public? Okay, let's move on to public meeting items. This is item F1. We're going to have an information presentation on the U.S. Highway 50, Carson City and Lyon County, including a project to begin in late May 2014. And a proposed traffic signal in Dayton. Patrick?
Well, I'll just introduce this. At the last meeting, we had several different comments made about U.S. 50. The two things that were primarily brought up were, number one, a project that's going to be starting here. Actually, I believe the notice proceed is for next week. That's a long-planned project to do pavement work and also some safety improvements in eastern Carson City and in Mount House and Lyon County. And another thing that was brought up were concerns regarding safety in the Highway 50 corridor, and also related to that, a proposed signal at Fortune Drive on Highway 50. At the last meeting, the questions certainly exceeded that which I could be counted on to do a good job representing. So I asked to have brought back at this meeting and to give the Nevada Department of Transportation a chance to address those questions, because the NDOT is the one doing the project here. I'll be presenting Mr. Steve Bird, who is the project manager for that project, who will be able to tell us all about it. And I believe Member Van Havel will be able to address the signal on Highway 50 at Fortune Drive. So if it pleases the chair, I'll ask Mr. Bird to approach the podium and present information about the upcoming project.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks, Patrick. My name is Steve Bird. I'm the senior road designer for the U.S. 50 project in Mount House. I'm pleased to announce that the project's been awarded to Granite Construction. The cost is approximately $6.2 million. The project consists of rehabilitating the pavement. We're also contemplating the improvements, a new T intersection of Flint Drive and State Route 341. It'll be a raised median with new XLD cell lanes. We're also placing concrete barrier rail in the median from Draco to Flint Drive to prevent head-on collisions. That'll be part of the contract as well. We're also improving lighting at State Route 341. Currently, there's only approximately 4 street lights there. It'll be upgraded to 16 lights. There'll also be a new XL diesel lane at Alfonso Drive. As you know, at the Shell gas station, a lot of the trucks trying to make that right turn to Carson City have to compensate for that grade. We'll be constructing an Excel lane for them to make a free right to compensate for that grade. We're also placing or perpetuating the centerline rumble strips throughout the corridor. We're also enhancing the striping through the corridor, making the designated left-hand turns a little bit longer. We're also replacing the existing ped ramps out there, making them more ADA compliant. And we are also repaving all the approaches, so new stop signs and new stop bars throughout the corridor. Construction is tentatively set for June 2nd and completing by sometime in November. And working hours would be primarily done at nighttime, 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. Any questions on the project?
Steve, I do have one quick question, and then we'll open up to any of the members here. And then anybody in the audience that wants to share anything.
Okay.
What are you going to do at the intersection of the Virginia City Highway and Highway 50? Is that going to be a high-T intersection?
Correct. That'll be a high-T with raised median islands, similar to what's at Johnson Lane.
Thanks. Any member comments or questions?
I have a question.
Mr. Furo?
Is there anywhere where the general public can go out and look at the plans?
I don't believe it's on NDOT's website, but I can certainly talk to someone about making them available.
Mr. McKenna?
The coming westbound on 50 at Flint Drive, you said there's going to be some type of median in there.
Correct.
Are there going to be left turn lanes or?
Yeah, Flint Drive will still maintain the left in, left out, right in, right out.
Okay.
The raised median will just help delineate that and make it more clear to traffic.
And can you explain what a high T intersection is?
Just a three-legged T intersection. The term high is high-speed T intersection.
Okay.
So it's just a raised median, and again, it's just to kind of help delineate what's on the ground rather than just striping.
But you mentioned Johnson Lanes, but there's not going to be a stoplight on it or things.
There will
like
not
that.
Be a stoplight or any signalized features on the road.
Any other member questions or comments?
Steve, in that intersection there, I remember seeing something, but coming off of 341, will you still be able to make a left onto Highway 50?
Yes. The traffic movements at 341 will be as they are today. However, we are constructing a frontage road on the south side from Dorf to Jeanette. And what that does is it's combining all the the local access on that side and reroutes them on each side of 341. Because right now it's kind of an uncontrolled intersection. There's adjoining driveways in that vicinity. And the problem with that is you have conflicting left turns. So to eliminate that, we're constructing the raised median. And in conjunction, we're also constructing a frontage road on the south side to pick that traffic up and redistribute them around each side of 341.
I have to go along with Vice Chair Fierro. It would be great to have the kind of artist rendition of that intersection so people understand what it is.
Okay. We can certainly put that on NDOT's website.
Member Earp?
On the deceleration lanes, the right turns off of Highway 50, are they going to be offset? Those have become an issue, and the road safety audits is causing a blind spot for the...
Unfortunately, there's not room to do that. I know what you're talking about, but without major widening to Highway 50, right, we're unable to offset the XLD cells.
Okay.
Ideally, yeah, we would like to do that, but given that the scope was a payment preservation project, it just wasn't in our budget to start doing that kind of elaborate widening along the corridor. Plus, the Flint Drive, we're constrained with barrier rail. As you know, it's basically fixed on either side. So we were trying to keep the improvements within that set corridor.
Okay. Any other member comments, questions?
In addition to vehicular travels, there's a lot of people that use Highway 50 for bicycle. Have you come up with any idea to improve that on
we're
the shoulders?
Perpetuating the 10-foot shoulders. We were asked to take a look at putting dedicated bike lanes in there, and again, unfortunately, given the scope of the project, widening was out of the equation to try to provide a 5-foot dedicated lane and some kind of shoulder. So, unfortunately, there's a lot of curb and gutter through that corridor, and that would entail taking up the curb and gutter and then performing the widening and then restriping it. So, again, given the context of the project, it wasn't a prudent thing for us to pursue.
Any other member comments?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Go ahead, Patrick.
I just wanted one piece of information. I was told by another member of NDOT staff today, and Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you're going along with the sheriff tomorrow.
Yes,
there's NDOT staff offered to take a tour of the project to discuss this with law enforcement, Carson City Sheriff and Lyon County Sheriff, and I understand the Lyon County Sheriff can't make it tomorrow morning, but I'm sure he'll be happy to give a tour when he can. But I know the Carson City Sheriff is going to be taking a tour tomorrow, and so they are reaching out to the law enforcement community as well.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or any questions for anybody in the audience of Mr. Byrd? Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, Courtney Bloomer, Carson City Health and Human Services Director. Yeah. Hi, I'm Courtney Bloomer with Carson City Health and Human Services. I'm the Bike and Pedestrian Safety and Access Coordinator for the Health Department. My question is similar to Mr. Fierro's question. With regards to perpetuating the bicycle access from Lyon County into Carson City, how will that be handled where the additional acceleration and deceleration lanes are being added?
In those particular areas, we'll actually be constructing a 5-foot bike lane.
Okay, thank you. So. Additionally, I was part of the road safety audit that evaluated Highway 50 last October. It was very smoky that day. And one of the recommendations from that road safety audit was additional corridor lighting along the length of the corridor. Is that going to be added as part of this project?
Corridor lighting?
Lighting.
Oh, lighting. Sorry. We looked into that as well, and unfortunately, it just became very expensive due to the fact there's not service in the immediate area. So it was looked at. Unfortunately, again, it was just cost prohibitive with this project.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Courtney. Anybody else? Patrick, we're now going to talk about the traffic signal in Dayton.
Yes, so I guess you probably could sit down, Mr. Byrd. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Don't leave yet. And I'll turn it over to Member Van Havel, who's going to discuss that proposed signal.
Okay, thank you. Jason Van Havel with Nevada Department of Transportation. A couple comments on the potential signal at Fortune Drive out there on US 50. At this point, the CVS, which is a potential development going in the area, is not in yet, and the traffic volumes and velocities out in the area appear to be stable. We had a RSA here recently go out. There's been a extensive crash analysis happened in the area within the last year to try to determine if it's a hot spot, relatively speaking, across the state, and it was not determined to be a hot spot. There was a traffic signal warrant study in roughly June of 12, and at that point, the traffic signal was not warranted. And simply from NDOT's standpoint, from a liability standpoint, NDOT cannot install a traffic signal unless the warrants are met. Once the warrants are met, then a signal could be installed. So as we have additional developments in the area, it's a permit condition for the developer to conduct a traffic study in the area. And with the additional traffic volumes, then we'll reevaluate the warrant study and take a look to see if there's an appropriate for a potential signal at that time. So that's...
Thank you, Jason.
Very concise.
Any member comments or questions of Jason?
I do.
Yep. Member Figueroa?
Yeah. I've been informed by our Public Works Director, Mike Workman, out in Lyon County, that he has met with the Department of Transportation in addition to speaking with the department about the light at Fortune Drive. He mentioned the intersection, the main entrance to Smith Supermarket, which ever since that shopping center went in, the Dayton community has had to deal with the increase in traffic accidents, mainly T-bone accidents. In our audience today, we have Chief John Gillenwater, who could probably, you know, contest also this, that he's had to go out there many times to assist these accidents, and I just don't understand how a department that tries to pride itself into this zero fatalities doesn't seem to be concerned with the Dayton community, specifically that intersection that we keep on asking for some type of readjustment on the turning movements, because we know that you know, the public's always going to say we need the traffic lights, we need the speed limits change. From my research, and it's, you know, been confirmed with the Department of Transportation, the biggest problem out there is access control points, and we've got two locations. We've got Smith's and we've got Fortune Drive, and there's a problem there, and it seems like it's being glazed over. And at some point, when you hear from the public constantly that they feel like nothing's being done, their response, I show them the United States Department of Transportation warrants for signals. It's not doing anything for them. All they say back in return is how many people need to die before we get a light in, how many people need to die or be hurt before we fix the intersection at Smith's.
Thank you, Member Fierro. Jason, would you like to comment?
Sure. Certainly any life is too many lives to lose on any section of Nevada roads. The goal of the department is the zero fatalities. And with the resources that we have, the analysis that we're performing, we're trying to implement those resources the most effectively and efficiently, most life benefit-wise we can around the state. And at this point, the analysis of the area is, as far as the warrants for the signal goes, it's not warranted at this time. But any life, obviously, is too many, and it is of grave concern to the department. And so stretching our resources thin around the state, we're doing the best we can.
Thank you. Any other member comments? Any comments from anybody in the audience?
I'd like to add something to that.
Okay, Mr. Byrd. First, you, Mr. Byrd, then we'll...
Okay. Well, I just want to let people know that, you know, we have taken a look at that intersection, and not only just the Fortune Drive intersection, we're also looking at the entire corridor, starting from Flowery to Fortune. So I think not only are we trying to meld just the isolated issue with Fortune, we're trying to look at the bigger picture, and that includes Smith's, Flowery Drive,
Pinecone, and how all that should flow together. So we have sat down with Lyon County and have drafted up a conceptual plan for that area. And again, unfortunately, it always comes back to money. There's no money to do the job. But however, we have met with the owners of Smith's. I've met with Doug Hone. We have sat down with Lyon County. We have developed a plan. Again, it comes back to the fact that there's no one ending up any money to do the project. So NDOT has taken a look at it and have tried to develop some long-term solutions to that area.
Thank you.
If anyone's interested in looking at that, please go ahead and contact me at my office, and I'll be more than willing to sit down with anyone and go over it with you.
Thank you, Mr. Bird.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Board. My name is Bill Miles, and I am the lead developer out at 50 Fortune and sold the property to CVS Pharmacy. So, Jason, I appreciate your comments, and Steve, but please know that I, as a developer, and Lyon County, Central Lyon County Fire District, Carson Tahoe Hospital, are willing to pay for the light without any cost out of NDOT's pocket whatsoever. And here this afternoon, we have Jeff Page, who's the Lyon County Manager. We have John Gillenwater, who's Central Lyon County Fire Chief. We have Mr. John Stevens, who's President of the Lyon County School Board. We have Rebecca Bonner, who I think is representing Carson Tahoe Hospital this afternoon. So with that said, in your goal of zero fatalities on Nevada highways, you have a mechanism immediately available to you to control and slow traffic down in an area where there's been article after article after article in the local papers about problems on Highway 50 and fatalities. And again, this is without any cost to NDOT that we are offering to put the signal in. Whether the signal meets warrants or not, I appreciate the public process and that you guys in theory follow that. But, you know, I look at traffic signals that have gone in this region that do not follow public policy and were put in because of political arm twisting. You know, I can be specific. I really don't want to. But in this case, I mean, this is kind of a common sense situation where I think it's very reasonable that, you know, we're ready to hang those traffic signals on Highway 50 right now and be in 100% compliance with all NDOT's rules, regulations, et cetera, with the exception of maybe the warrants. And, you know, I would invite any of the other folks here to speak if they would so like, or if you have any questions at all. There's some people who actually really understand this stuff behind me. And, you know, and one of the issues, particularly Central Lyon County Fire District, right now, their access on the Highway 50 is a dirt road, essentially, with no signalization at all coming out of their fire station in that area. So with the light there, this would give them an opticon to be able to activate that signal and in theory, get on Highway 50 and be moving hopefully faster and safer.
Brad?
Bill, can we talk a little bit about current plans for development in that area as well? CVS is planned for 2016, correct?
CVS is a bit of a disappointment, okay? And I'm, quite frankly, more of an industrial developer than a retail developer, but because of economic development, I took this on and actually got this sold to CVS, and CVS was trying to buy this lot for like 8 years. In theory, CVS was supposed to break ground here in 2014 and be underway. That did not happen. I think worst case, they're going to have a store open by 2017, but I can't, quite frankly, speak for CVS. I can tell you that based on today's market, that they paid a ridiculous amount of money in order to get that lot on the corner of Highway 50 and Fortune. So they're very heavily invested in that property and do intend on coming there.
And then in addition to CVS, there's 100 acres of residentially zoned land adjacent to Fortune Drive that's currently in escrow with a home developer who is planning on building 400 homes there, all of which will exit onto Fortune Drive.
So, you know, we may be a little early based on warrants. At a point in time, there will be a signal needed at that intersection. It's at no cost to NDOT. We might as well get people familiar with it now, particularly, you know, based on a zero life policy that NDOT has.
Thank you, Mr. Miles. Any other questions of Mr. Miles? Anybody else?
My name is Bob Hastings. I am a Lyon County Commissioner. I share the Dayton area with Commissioner Fierro. I can tell you, I appreciate warrants and what they mean and why they're there. What I can tell you is I have yet to have one citizen in Dayton say, don't put a light in. Don't do anything out there. It's okay. Every time somebody gets hurt, every time somebody gets killed out there, we are inundated. As Mr. Miles said, we have the option there to put that light in. It's there. It's at no cost. It's what the citizens want. It's not going to create a problem. I have had somebody from staff at NDOT, one person, and I'm not going to name names, but they made the statement to me, well, you realize if you put a stoplight in, you're going to have more rear-end accidents? Well, I'm thinking people would be willing to take the chance on a few more rear-end accidents than they are on the fatalities. I myself, not by any plan that I had, I happen to live in the neighborhood that exits on Fortune Drive. I know what it's like coming out at 5 o'clock at night trying to make a left turn onto Highway 50 and head eastbound. You can sit there 3, 5, 7 minutes. And what ends up happening is the people coming out of those neighborhoods, and there's dozens of neighborhoods on both sides, they finally get to the point where they say, screw it, I'm going to take my chance. And they slam on the gas. And there's a lot of close calls out there. I can appreciate the warrants, as I said, but here's the thing. When I hear the statement and we have something in front of us like that stoplight that's already paid for, already to go in, that the citizens want, and I hear, well, it's not considered a hot spot, and I really try to talk people out of saying this, what it says in my head is, how many more people do we have to get killed out there or seriously injured before we say, okay, now we can put the light in? Because that's really what it is. It has to become a hot spot. More people have to get hurt. More people have to get killed. Then we'll consider it a hot spot. Then we'll take the equipment that's already been paid for and we'll put it up. I am going to invite each and every one of you to a special meeting. Mr. Bird has graciously accepted an invitation on June 5th at 6:30 at Sutro Elementary School. He will be coming out to speak to the community. Part of the problem is misinformation. We all know how that works. People hear this and hear that, and what's reality? Mr. Bird, as well as members of the Lyon County Sheriff's Department, haven't had a chance to talk to Chief Gillenwater yet. Part of the Roads Department will be there just to try to get a clear answer out there as to what we're looking at and what we're planning on doing. So I'm going to invite each and every one of you to that. One last thing I'd like to say in regards to that intersection. I believe when the warrant study was done, and this is what I've been told, so if I'm inaccurate, I apologize. It was done in June of 2012, not long after school was out for the summer. There is a major elementary school 4 blocks from that intersection that the school buses come in and out of Highway 50 each and every day. I believe there's 600 kids in that school. If we were looking for warrants and reasons, that's it right there. And if our studies were done when those school kids were not in session, that's a problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hastings.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Page. I'm the county manager for Lyon County. I've been with Lyon County for 28 years. I spent 22 years of my career with the sheriff's office working throughout the county. So I have a great familiarity with the growth in Dayton that's occurred over the years. And unfortunately, Dayton changed a number of years back. We went from a two-lane road to a four-lane highway. And with that change came a number of cultural issues for people, and that is how to drive. So I was in Silver Springs earlier today for a contract negotiation with the Sheriff's Employees Association, and driving here, one thing that became astutely obvious to me, when you come over the top of the hill from Mount House into Carson City, people drive like good citizens. When you get over the hill going back that way, they drive like idiots. And part of the reason why they drive like idiots isn't that they're stupid. It's the controls that we're putting in place in Mount House will start to affect that traffic. But right now it's wide open. My concern is if we don't put the stoplight in today, we wait till the warrants are in place, it takes that much longer for the general public to understand and learn how to drive in that traffic. If we're getting 400 new homes in that Fortune Drive area in the next several years, you're going to see traffic increase greatly. Mr. Hastings brought up the issue that when the traffic study was done was when school's out. I'm here to tell you that today, as school is in, the traffic is extremely heavy driving from Silver Springs all the way through Dayton into Carson City. Of course, it's getting close to 5 o'clock and people are moving back and forth from Carson to the Dayton area. But it's you can tell by watching the public, those who are paying attention and those who aren't. The traffic light is already paid for. I understand and appreciate the warrant system that NDOT has in place. I understand the bureaucracy, and I don't mean that in a negative light. I mean that I understand what the rules are and why they're there. I do the same thing. I have county codes that are completely asinine, but they're there, so I have to deal with those. I guess my question is, and back to Commissioner Hastings, in the last 10 years, I've lost two friends on that highway. One of them in that area of Highway Fortune, the other one up in Mount House. I've had two employees critically injured in the last 10 years on that highway. And my question is the same to NDOT today as it was back in 1986 when Sheriff Jim Vick and I met with the then director of NDOT to discuss Exit 48 in Fernley and how many people we had to kill before they did something with that. The issue at hand today is safety of the traveling public up and down Highway 50. It's very embarrassing to me that Lyon County stretch of Highway 50 is known as the deadliest stretch of highway by the traveling public. I have enough problems in Lyon County without having that reputation as well. So anything we can do to push that process forward, to get that traffic light in place, to deal with the issues, get the traveling public trained and educated on how to drive through that section of town. I mean, if I had to do it all over again, we'd build a giant McCarran Boulevard all the way around from Silver Springs all the way to Carson City. But we don't have that money. State doesn't have that money. So how do we make this thing work? How do we get it beyond the warrant issue and get it in place? We've already paid our money. John's paid, Chief Gunwater's paid his money. Bill's paid his money. Carson Tallis paid his money. We're willing to put it up. Let's get it done. And with that, the only other thing I have to say in regards to the traffic on Highway 50, I appreciate what you talked about, what's going on in Mount House. I will tell you that I talked with the sheriff this morning or this afternoon at negotiations. He apologizes he can't make it. Short notice for him. But they're very much in favor of doing something with the Highway 50 Fortune thing because it's not so much the traffic coming off Fortune. It's if the light's timed right, it's traffic coming out of Smith's and moving either east or west. When that traffic light's at stop, now we have a better access for people to get in and out, and we're not hurting people or killing people in that section of the road as well. So they're very much supportive of it as well, and I pass that along to you from him. Any questions or concerns?
Thank you, Mr. Page. Any comments or questions of him? Thank you.
Gentlemen, John Stevens, Lyon County School Board. I'd like to just continue the conversation a little bit that has been taking place but not become redundant. First of all, I'd like to thank you for the efforts and changes you've made to Mound House. Our near-miss occurrences with the school buses has dropped tremendously. It is a much safer route now to transport students, 26 to 30 per bus, single vehicle, but a lot of humans on the bus. And we're having a much safer time accessing the residential area and then, again, accessing Highway 50. And I've been a resident of Dayton for 52 years, 53, and I've seen the tremendous growth firsthand and as it's occurred. And what we're seeing is really just an access of 50 from the residential areas and an access to the residential areas from 50. We feel fairly secure now with the changes in Mount House that we have a much safer ability to transport students in the Mount House area. But we are becoming concerned, and the letter of support the school board wrote to NDOT is concerning the access to the residential area and the two schools, Sutro at Fortune and Riverview past Riverboat. Any break in the flow of that traffic would give people an access to the residential area in 50. And to Bob's point, it's the frustrated person that jumps on the road. If they jump in front of a school bus, the reaction time's not there. And we are concerned about that liability. Our bus drivers are continually giving us concerns about access to the schools and back on 50. It's becoming very difficult and dangerous. So if there's any data we can supply on the amount of students we're transporting, the amount of buses we have on the road, the amount of access to and from 50, any data the school district can supply in support of this, we'd be glad to. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Any questions of Mr. Stevens? Thank you. Anybody else?
Good afternoon. My name is John Gillenwater. I'm Fire Chief, Central Lyon County. I have kind of a couple concerns. Right now, our apparatus pulls out off a dirt road. It's another tap on the Highway 50, and that's one of our biggest problems. So having a control point for us and school buses and that sort of thing would be greatly appreciated. We take about 10 to 20,000 trips out of that station per year. We run 3,000 calls out of that firehouse, so a lot of people don't think about our volume. We're the organization that takes care of the people that don't meet the warrant, and that's it's a nasty thing. We don't call it the deadliest highway. It's the hamburger highway. So having that control point is so important for our apparatus to move in and out of there and to get us where we need to go safely has been one of the challenges we've had since we built that fire station in that community. And when we built the fire station community, I'm sure we certainly didn't meet the warrants because there wasn't any other houses around us. And so as we've grown in there, we see that the area that I would consider the bad part probably goes much further down the road than Fortune. That control point would ripple through the county in both directions on Highway 50, including the Smiths down to Flowery, but probably down to Sagali. And that's where we just had the double fatality. It's going to help slow that traffic down just a little bit further down the road. We've made great strides, I think, in the Mount House area. I mean, when NDOT changed the speed limit down to 45 miles an hour, that was a big deal, and that helped save a lot of lives. I mean, Highway 50, by design, I think we'd all agree that it's got too many taps in it. Anybody can go ahead and drive on the Highway 50 wherever they want. When we have a wreck, people just drive out in the desert and drive around our wreck while we're landing helicopters on the highway. So it's not a very well-controlled roadway to begin with. So, you know, as we can look at that problem and work on that, this would have a ripple throughout the entire Highway 50 corridor. When we look at the one stoplight that we have in Dayton, I don't have a lot of wrecks there. I don't have fatalities there, that's for sure. So when I look at having another stoplight, the learning curve may get us some rear-end accidents, but it's going to take out my T-bones. My T-bones is what kill all my people. So I would really appreciate you looking beyond the warrants and being maybe proactive rather than always having to be, understand government is reactive. Catastrophic theory is reform is where we live. We have to have something bad happen in order to fix it. Well, we've put the cash up and we're ready to go. We just need your help and you're okay. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gillenwater. Any comments, Mr. Gillenwater? Any member comments? Anybody from the audience? Anybody else? See, this is informational item. Seeing none, we'll move on to item F2. Oh, John, sorry.
Purpose of CAMPO is to carry out transportation planning activities within the metropolitan planning area. Looking at a map, I assume this is in the CAMPO area. So I think it would be appropriate to, at the next meeting, put some type of resolution agenda item, perhaps drafted by our Lyon County members, so that we can take an action up or down on it. Just like you say, it is information today. There's a problem in the metropolitan planning area, and I think we should take a position on it.
Thank you, John. Anybody else? Steve?
I've got one more thing. Memory serves me right, I remember seeing an email a few weeks ago from Deb Starnes that we were going to push that 45-mile-an-hour speed limit further to the east. Currently, as it sits now, it's just past the hospital or at the hospital. So I believe NDOT is going to be pushing that 45-mile-an-hour speed limit further to the east. Because right now, like I said, cars are approaching
fortune at 55 miles an hour, not 45. So I will follow up on that, but I'm pretty sure we're going to be moving that speed limit sign. So for a short-term fix, that will be happening, I believe, in the next couple of weeks. Failed to mention that earlier. So
thank you, Mr. Bird.
Okay.
Are we ready to go to item F2?
Well, yeah, and so just to be clear, based on Member McKenna's comment and lack of any other comments to the contrary, we'll work with legal staff and develop a draft statement of support or endorsement for this improvement, and I'll run it by the chair prior to the next meeting and bring it back.
Steve, can I ask you a question? Who looks at the speed limits? Because from Silver Springs all the way to Dayton, the speed limit in some places is 65, lights on, 60, lights off, and 55 in other places, and 45. Who looks at that, and why isn't it a little bit more uniform? People could understand we'll just drive at one speed until we get to town or something like that.
Right. Well, it's my understanding that we do, by law, we have to do speed studies, and I'm not the expert on speed studies. I'm just the designer. But we have taken a look at that corridor, and I'm not sure if anything was adjusted since we've widened Highway 50 from Shavs to Roy's Road. It is posted 65, but that's because it's a full-blown four-lane divided highway. So the decision there was to go ahead and raise the speed limit to 65 through that particular area. And I believe 2 years ago we raised the speed limit from, in the greater Dayton area, if you will, to from 55 to 60 because it met that criteria. As far as the inconsistencies are concerned, I'm not sure if there's a specific area that you're concerned about. It's 35 through Dayton, then it ramps up to 45 right about at the hospital, at the state park, and it holds that till you get just past Smith's, and then it ramps up to 60. And then when you get to our four-lane divided section, it ramps up to 65. So, I mean, in my mind, it makes sense. It's a logical layout of the speed limit signs.
But not to hijack this thing, but I think it stays to 65 all the way past Ramsey, Weeks, Cutoff, all the way almost to Silver Springs.
Correct.
And that's a two-lane road. Some parts of it says lights on, headlight, daytime headlight section, some right. It doesn't. It just seems to me that if you're looking at this corridor, that a little uniformity might go a long ways on some of these things.
Yeah, we can certainly take a look at that and revisit that.
My blood pressure goes up every time I go past Ramsey Week Cutoff because there's a school and there's another intersection at Ramsey Weeks and they're only a couple hundred feet apart. People are trying to turn left from Ramsey Weeks to go westbound on Highway 50 and you're going 65 miles an hour through there.
And may I add, I mean, artificially lowering the speed limit has ramifications too. You get what we call the 85th percentile, where you have some people comply with the speed limit, some people don't. So there's implications with artificially lowering the speed limit as well because of compliance. Then you start building up platoons, you have less opportunity to get these gaps in traffic too. So again, I just so people understand, there's reasons why we post speed limits a certain way.
Thanks.
Want to add on.
Member Fierro?
Once again, I just my main concern is, and I mentioned this earlier, is when you get the public, one of their first reactions is just lower the speed limit. But what that causes is grouping, you know, and people start following each other in large volumes closer to each other, and you get accidents that way. It comes down to like almost a psychology, because you can go down to Clark County in Las Vegas area, and they have city streets that are 45 miles per hour. They don't have near the problems we do, but we have mound houses 45 miles per hour, and we have accidents left and right. And once again, access control points. You go through mound house, it's like every 100 feet or less, there's a way to get out onto that highway, and that's a huge problem there. I can see in the Dayton area near Fortune Drive, as you're heading westbound, to start slowing down the traffic as you're approaching Fortune, but I would hate to see as you're leaving that area to extend out a slower traffic speed, because I think what you'll end up getting is you get those people that are leaving Smith's, they want to get up and roll, and then you start getting nice spacing as you're heading out east. So I hope you guys really take a good look at that. Thanks.
Anybody else?
Enforcement has made a huge dent in the accidents through Mount House, too. So just as a note, I don't know what the statistics are, if Lyon County has that information, but I know last year it's dropped dramatically.
Could you use the mic?
Yeah. Sorry. I was just mentioning that in the last year, accidents in the Mount House area have really dropped off because of enforcement. And again, I don't have those statistics, but with meeting with the Mount House Advisor Group about 2 months ago, the local sheriff was indicating how much 2 years ago what the accidents were through there and the calls he had to go to versus in the last year has dramatically dropped off. So enforcement has been very successful in the Mount House area controlling some of those accidents. So for whatever it's worth.
Thank you, Mr. Bird. Anybody else? Okay, let's go to item F2. This is the Unified Planning Work Program. Patrick, Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you mentioned, this is our proposed Unified Planning Work Program, which contains our budget for the next fiscal year and all the tasks we have outlined before us. This is coming to you as a final draft. We're seeking adoption tonight, and there really haven't been any substantive changes since we had it before you last month. We did have a 30-day comment period. We did not receive any comments. I think the only change of any note was replace Member Foltz with Member Erb now for the Douglas County representative. But other than that, it's really the same document that you saw before. And assuming we get approval tonight, we will then forward this on to NDOT, who will in turn recommend approval to the USDOT, FHWA, and FTA for approval.
Thank you, Dan. Any member comments or questions? We've seen this before, right?
Yep.
We went over it last month?
Yes, we did.
Any member comments or questions from anybody in the audience on the UPWP? Are we ready for a motion?
I'll make the motion.
Member Fierro?
I move that we approve the fiscal year 2015 Unified Planning Work Program as presented.
Second.
We have a motion. It's been seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Let's go to item G. Patrick, future agenda items?
Yes, there are two to note. That one of them is the one we just added about the action on the proposed US 50 Fortune signal. And in probably wonderful timing, NDOT management is going to be here for the annual county tour. Member Van Havel, do you know who's going to be representing NDOT for that? I once heard it was Rudy himself, but just checking.
I believe that Rudy will take this one.
Okay. So we believe that Director Malfabon will be here for the annual visit that they do right about this time of year every year to review the overall NDOT perspective and the work program as it relates the state work program as it relates to the Campo area.
Thank you, Patrick. Any other agenda items from any members? Any agenda items requested by anybody in the audience? Okay, let's move on to board comments.
Just to add on to Patrick's comments of the annual county tour being next month, also next month in Lyon County is our county tour out there. Tom Greco will be making that presentation to the Lyon County commissioners. So,
thank you, Member.
To keep in mind.
Anybody? Brett? Rob? Mr. McKenna? Mr. Fierro? Jim?
No.
John? Okay, no. I guess there's no member comments. So a public comment. This is the last time in this meeting that the members of the public can address the MPO by coming to the podium. You're entitled to 3 minutes per person per topic. If you want an extended discussion, it'll be placed on a future agenda item if you request that information through Patrick. Is there anybody in the audience that wants to ask that an agenda item be put on the next meeting or wants to share anything this evening? Can we have a motion for adjournment?
Move to approve. Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned. The RTC meeting will start in 5 minutes. Showtime. I call the meeting of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission for Wednesday, May 14th, 2014 to order. It's about 5:20. We're in the CR room. First item on the agenda is roll call and determination of the quorum.
Chairperson McKenna?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Smolenski?
Here.
Commissioner Bonkowski?
Here.
Commissioner Mallory?
Here.
Commissioner McQuarrie?
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is public comment. If anyone has anything they wish to address to the commission, please come forward. I don't see anyone moving, so I'll move on to the next item. Item C1, possible action, action to approve the minutes of March 12, 2014.
I move to approve the minutes of March 12, 2014 as presented.
It's been moved and seconded. Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It carries. Next item on the agenda is agenda management notice. Does anyone in the room want anything moved? Hearing none, we'll go on to the next item on the agenda, disclosures. Does anyone have, any member have any member of the commission wish to explain any contact with the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the commission? Hearing none, seeing none, I'll move on to the next item on the agenda. F1 for possible action
to adopt a Carson City Complete Streets policy for implementation by city staff. Patrick?
Yes, I will introduce this and hand it over to Dan. So a Complete Streets policy is, you know, it's a policy document. This is not a not a contract of any sort. This is not dictate detailed design at this time. But what it is a very common document these days across the country. There are statewide ones or metropolitan ones or cities, counties, various governments have implemented these. And the basic concept is to consider all modes of transportation when building, rebuilding, working on roadways in our community. We are not seeking to degrade the service of any mode, but more to encourage the consideration of other modes, including bicycling and walking when working on our roads. One other thing I want to note is that we previously, as a city, previously applied to be a bicycle-friendly community. It's a few years ago now. We've discussed that. We've come back to this board to say what our intents are on that. We've been making more progress, and we feel that we're approaching the point at which we can reapply with a greater chance of success. We'll have an opportunity to do so in a few months. But in the interim period since we last applied, Complete Streets policies have become so commonplace and accepted that that basically the adoption of a policy of this nature is pretty much considered a prerequisite now for the application of to be a bicycle-friendly community. And the other part of the timing of this is that with the Board of Supervisors' adoption of a plan for capital programs, including the modifications planned, you know, at least at a conceptual level, for downtown Carson Street, that would also qualify as a complete street striped project. So, if we were to adopt this policy, we believe it would certainly bolster our case to be a bicycle-friendly community, as one of the benefits that it would bring us. But I will turn it over to Dan. We can talk about further about the contents of the document.
Sure. Thank you for that introduction, Patrick. And as Patrick said, you know, this is basically a document that will kind of guide and shape, you know, future decisions when it comes to making roadway improvements, doing it with consideration to all modes, all users, to all abilities, and kind of within the context of, you know, that particular neighborhood. Fair amount of effort went into this. We did research, you know, kind of what national practices were, and tried to see what other communities, you know, even in Nevada, are doing. and it was developed with comments. I believe we received comments from members of Muscle Power, our Safe Routes to School coordinator, and our own Parks and Recreation Department. And those were incorporated to varying degrees. And this is kind of a document that represents a commitment toward, implementing this policy. It's kind of an initial step, and it's not like by adopting this, you know, change is going to happen overnight, but this will allow us to kind of evaluate our own design standards and ordinances and see where, you know, we can improve things and what will work and where there's room for improvement. And it kind of outlines, suggested. It's not hard and fast, but again, it's going to be kind of a learning curve as we go forward. But suggests different performance measures that we can use to kind of track and see how we're doing with the implementation of this policy. And with that, I will open it up to any questions.
Go ahead.
Dan and Pat, on page 3 under exceptions, Patrick and I had a conversation this past week about this. The last sentence in the first paragraph says this is intended to be an exhaustive list, meaning that there could possibly be an implication to future planning and the costs of those projects going forward if all these additional requirements are implemented. Can you kind of just walk us through that so that we have an understanding of what we're saying and why we're saying it here?
Sure. Well, with any exceptions to a policy, I mean, the more exceptions that are allowed, it kind of weakens, I think, the intent of what the policy stands for. So just to, you know, call it out so everyone knows what we're talking about here, we've listed, you know, four exceptions to where a situation would arise where you might not implement some sort of complete streets treatment. The first one being where it's just not a feasible or even allowable, such as, you know, like a freeway corridor or something. I mean, that, or freeway itself. I mean, that's obviously interstate freeways are for automobiles only, and there's a reason for that, because to allow other modes on there would represent safety hazards. So that's kind of self-explanatory. Number two, I mean, it gets a little more gray, but when the costs of the accommodation, whether it be bike, ped, transit, whatever, or all the above, is excessively disproportionate to the need and the potential benefit of the probable use. So basically saying that, you know, you do some sort of cost-benefit analysis and it just really, you know, breaks the bank by trying to implement these other modes, and, you know, you're not going to have a project at all if you do implement that. But again, I think, and this is one of the things we probably need to define going forward, but that would should take like a thorough cost-benefit analysis. So it's not just a, you know, a decision that's kind of made on the fly, but you have actual hard numbers to kind of back that up to really say, yeah, this is why we can't really do it in this case. The third one, again, is, you know, open maybe to a little interpretation. It's where a documented absence of current and future needs. So basically what that means is you have, say you have an area of town and, you know, it's you don't expect, based on land use policies or whatever policies you have in place, that really that you're going to have the population density or the traffic volumes or anything to really support putting in particular complete streets, just because the expected use is so low that it's really not even an issue, I guess, in that circumstance. So, and again, we wouldn't really expect many of these situations to occur, but just calling it out there. And then the last one, which I think is more clear-cut, it says that the project involves only ordinary maintenance activities designed to keep assets in acceptable condition. So this would be just like your micro-surfacing or maybe patching potholes or, you know, cleaning or sealing, that sort of thing, where you're not actually really altering any of the, you know, structure of the roadway. So those would be the four situations, I guess.
And if I may, we really, you know, the intent of this is to really exercise common sense, frankly. We don't, you know, plan or expect anyone to, build any tunnels or do massive cuts into hillsides or go through extraordinary lengths that are, as it says, you know, disproportionate to the benefit that would be expected here. So we want to make sure that we have these in here that will make sure that the common sense track is followed.
A question that came to mind when you said that was, all right, let's take complete streets and apply it to Fifth Street just down the block here when there's a lot of snow. Does that mean we have to tear out the whole thing and put in sidewalks that can be plowed by the city or something? I mean, what does complete streets common sense mean to that project, to that area?
Which part of... You're talking about the Fifth Street project we just built over by between Solomon and the freeway? Or?
No, I'm talking about between Roop and Solomon.
Oh, okay. well,
on the south side.
On the south side. Well, that's not dissimilar to other sidewalks in town. The project he's referring to is that right now it's not an accessible walkway, and we're about to implement a project where we'll be constructing sidewalks to make it accessible. So frankly, once we build that, that won't be any different than sidewalks anywhere else in town.
No, I think you missed the point. By the people with special needs.
Frost Asthma Estates, okay. Yes.
That area, it's built to current standards. And the residents there, because of their needs, cannot get out to catch the bus, et cetera, when there's snow on the ground. Does complete streets mean we have to tear that out and accommodate them, or?
Are you talking about tearing out the snow or tearing out the? I mean, we're about to build new sidewalk.
Well, if common sense requires we have to put a city crew out there to dig the snow out, or if common sense means we have to, I don't know, widen the sidewalks or traffic limits, et cetera, you know, I don't know. I always worry when the attorney comes over.
No, actually, he's asking the same question that Member Bonkowski asked, is, you know, should the word not be put in there for the exhaustive list? And what Dan was trying to explain was that was not a typo. That was intended to be that because, you know, as Dan said, following on, you know, other common practices and this type of policies and what's worked in other locations, you want to put exceptions in here that are reasonable, you know, disproportionate cost, or if you're only doing fixing potholes, you're not going to put in bike lanes. Those are the common sense things. The intent is to make this, these are the exceptions, you know, and this all can always be altered in the future if you need to, but to make this the exceptions so that you don't allow for unlimited exceptions that would pretty much necessarily weaken the intent and application of this policy. So while you could include more exceptions, and you could do that today if you wish, doing so just means that you add more opportunities for not implementing the intent of the policy in the first place. But you know, back to the snow shoveling, that's been a long-standing issue. I don't think that we're seeking to address snow removal by commercial or residential folks as part of this.
Don't get hung up with snow removal. What I'm trying to do is,
yes,
and what we can discuss it after we get some public comment, but you use the words guide and you use the words common sense, and those words always scare me because and so I wanted to flesh that out as to, is this really a guide or is this a Bible? And so anybody else on the commission have anything?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Patrick, does this give city staff like an open book to make design changes on the fly that match other? Is that what kind of where we go with that?
No. There's no intent to make design changes on the fly. This is as Dan said. This is not going to be anything overnight. This is a matter of, for example, the city public works department over a period of time, looking at our standard details and to see if is there something else we should be implementing, working with our community development department as far as what subsequent actions could be taken to encourage complete streets concepts to be included as appropriate in future developments, but we don't intend anything to be on the fly. This is not a lightning application in any regards. We won't even try to claim that. But it'll be looking at how we do business and what can we do going forward. One of the things is even listing the exceptions is when you're doing ordinary maintenance, it has a list of just examples of what constitutes ordinary maintenance. It's possible when you're micro-surfacing a road that there may be an opportunity to implement bike lanes, you know, and maybe not, but there are occasions where that is possible. But it's one of those things where, if you're out there micro-surfacing a road, you could look at that as a possibility. But it's not a requirement. but you look at your opportunities. That's the intent of where you can improve the system and where you can improve the network of facilities out there.
Just to kind of follow up on that, and I think I know where you're going, and what I was trying to, I guess, convey is that this really is more of a commitment that the city is behind this kind of policy in general. But, for example, when I was looking at some of the things that some other places did, like the city of Las Vegas, their policy is about one page long or two pages, but they went ahead after that was adopted and developed a whole book of design standards, which I'm assuming took a very long time and was very well thought out and probably, you know, vetted over several meetings. And so that, you know, that kind of change is kind of being implemented over time to where they actually have this document now saying, you know, this is how we would like to do things. And it has examples of, based on the context, you know, and certain types of neighborhoods or roadways, like this would be an ideal design standards, but it's open to modification if some things don't really work in the context of that particular neighborhood. So, again, I think this is kind of more like a first step and to kind of take a look at our ordinances and our design standards and see where they can be improved as we're going forward when new projects come up or if we do some kind of, you know, retrofits or whatever, you know, whenever opportunities arise.
Mr. Mallory, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Patrick and Dan, I think I understand the delicate balance you're trying to find on this exceptions. You don't want to have 100 of them, but you want to contain them. But I think one thing that we need to look at under exceptions is an emergency project. For example, if half a mile of a road washes away in a flood or something like that, and you just want to get it rebuilt the way it was before. You wouldn't need to go through any kind of process other than just rebuilding the road to the way it was before it was washed out. Because I think in an emergency, you want to get the serviceable facility back in operation. And you can look at adding all the amenities or whether it fits all the policies and all the rest of that stuff later.
Okay, Mr. Smolensky, and then we'll go to the public.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, in looking through this, you know, page one, you know, the introduction, what are complete streets? Paragraph four, it kind of tells you all about it, I think. Complete Streets seeks to develop integrated, connected networks of streets that are safe and accessible for all people. And it goes on, you know, makes attractive transportation such as walking and bicycling for more convenient, provides increased access to employment centers, commerce, and educational institutions. Complete Streets also improve the quality of life in the community by enhancing the aesthetic environment. You know, a couple of things. I mean, that says it all, and granted, I understand the exceptions, which keeps in line what you know, a stupid idea, you know, putting something on an interstate or a freeway. But a couple of quick questions. This is in draft form. It says draft, right? You mentioned earlier that Parks and Rec, Muscle Power, and some of the other organizations that are involved in it, did they help in the draft of this, or was this strictly by staff?
It's mostly by staff, by myself, to be honest. But they did review it. They did submit comments. I did incorporate them. I didn't incorporate all of them. You know, I discussed with Patrick what maybe would or would not be appropriate, but certainly everyone that provided comments, at least some of them got in there, and some of their input was taken into consideration. So,
rather than have three discussions, Ann or any of the public want to tell us what you think about our discussion or what you think about the policy?
Donna Inverson, president of Muscle Power. What I just wanted to say is that Muscle Powered is very much in favor of a policy for complete streets. I think what we've seen historically is there just was no thought of anyone other than the motorist as far as street development. And having a policy now puts a little more pressure on staff and you all and everything to consider all the different modes of transportation. And we in Muscle Power believe that every time we get a car off the road, by making it safer for a pedestrian or a bicyclist, makes it safer again and again and again until we finally can reach that critical mass where our streets are actually safer. We can get more kids walking to school, more people walking to, or biking to work. So we're very much in favor of a policy for complete streets so that we can see this improvement over time. We're not expecting that every street's going to have a bike lane, but we would like to see that every time a street is redone, someone says, oh, let's think about how can we do this the best way.
Let me ask Patrick as a comment to what you're saying. What's our current complete streets philosophy, policy, et cetera, in Carson City?
Well, we don't have a documented one, but the good thing to report is that, you know, not everything that is in this draft document is a new thing. We, over the last years, implemented Curry Street, which certainly has bicycle and pedestrian facilities on it, the Roop Street improvements out here. We have obviously been retrofitting other streets that previously didn't have bicycle and pedestrian facilities specifically for that purpose. And you know, heck, there's the Schultz Ranch development that's coming, which is an example of a private development. Even though we didn't have this policy in place, there are bicycle and pedestrian improvements that are coming along with that development, and notably because people in community development and public works worked with the developer, and them on their own volition are putting these in as well. So while we don't have an adopted policy, we have already been making strides in this, and we're already, like I said, not everything in here is new to us.
You know, I would like to say Patrick has been very supportive of us, but I do think that a lot of the changes that have come about have been because Muscle Power has been in meetings going, wait a minute, you didn't consider bicyclists, you didn't consider pedestrians. And so it would be nice that we wouldn't have to come every single time to fight for something. Maybe you guys wouldn't have to see us all the time.
Well, so. Is it a fight or is it simply the way government has to work, people be involved? That's where I'm having problems with this is that this is a piece of paper that says you will do this. We all leave. We all move on to bigger, better things, and suddenly it becomes a Bible. And there's something in there that somebody says, I'm not going to use common sense, and so now it becomes a cost. Whereas if we all talked and people came, then we could deal with the situation at the time. And I'm not suggesting people take one way or the other. That's just, Patrick says there's things in here that we're not doing now. Do we need to do them now, or do we need to put it in policy? I don't know.
I see it more as just a reminder to consider everything so that we don't have to wait till we get halfway through the planning phase, which I think did happen at one point on a portion of Roop Street, and then Muscle Power came, wait a minute, you didn't consider this, and we got changes. So it's just, I have not read the draft word by word. Anne has been more in sync with that. But I see it more as not a Bible, but a reminder that we consider all different modes of transportation whenever major changes are made to streets.
I can live with that. In fact, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Anyone else in the public? Anyone else in the commission?
I got the waivers for the cruiser ride, so I got to get right.
Okay. Enjoy.
My name's Ann McQuarrie, and I do support this strongly. I just want to make two points. One, I just want to give you a quick description of riding over here after I got my hair cut. I cut across two vacant dirt lots, three parking lots. I rode on the sidewalk twice. I rode on bike paths that stopped after a while. I rode through the extremely dangerous spooey on College Parkway and 395. And I cut across four lanes of traffic to get here. Those are all projects that were done at some point where they weren't considering bicyclists and pedestrians. I would say since a bicycle is my primary mode of transportation, since people do walk and there are people who can't drive, that this is more than an amenity. It's a modern transportation system. And the second point I'd like to make, and I'm sorry I came a little late, but I don't think that Patrick or Daniel made this. I think the last time I talked to you, I was talking to you about the Complete Streets bill that passed the legislature last year. Apparently, it was weakened quite a bit, but it did pass. But apparently, and I think Patrick probably knows more about this than I do, it is now being, they're starting to talk about in some way implementing it. It might be strengthened in the next legislative session, but I do know that part of what remained in that bill is that if there is ever any funding available, that a jurisdiction would have to have a complete streets policy in place in order to be eligible for that funding. It's not going to be a lot of funding, but I think it is a consideration. Thank you.
And have you read this document?
Yes, I have, but not yesterday. I read it the first time Daniel sent it to me, which was, I think, a couple of months
ago. But you had
ago.
Input onto it, into it.
Yes, I did. I thought it was a well-drafted policy for the most part.
Anyone else?
Hi. Thank you. Courtney Bloomer, Safe Routes to School Coordinator for Carson City and the surrounding area. I would just like to thank Dan and Patrick for working on this document and you all for considering it. I support this because for too long on the federal, state, and ultimately on the local level, transportation design and policy has been very car-centric. We've built bigger, faster roads for more cars. And in that process, we've really overlooked the walkers, the cyclists, the people with special needs who have transportation impairments. We haven't paid attention to the elderly. We haven't paid attention to children. A complete streets policy isn't an anti-car policy. It's a policy to bring equity to transportation. Everybody in Carson City deserves a way to get where they need to be. And that's really what this policy is about. And we've been very, very fortunate in having Dan and Patrick here because they are pro bike and walking. We don't have to fight with them about, oh, we want to add more bike amenities. They support that. But that's not guaranteed to always be the case. And having a policy in place that encourages and reminds those people who are working on planning our transportation systems really is a way to ensure that regardless of who is sitting in these chairs in the future, Carson City will still have something in place that really encourages them to consider all the citizens of Carson City. Thank you.
And we'll go to Brad, and then if anyone has any comments when Brad's talking, come on up, and we'll incorporate you into the discussion.
I fully support the Complete Streets policy, but a policy needs to be clear and concise, and as John said, when all of us have gone on to bigger and better things, the next group of people that read this policy need to understand it. So where I'm having a problem with this is the last two lines of the first paragraph under exceptions. It reads, the following is a list of possible exceptions and situations that may be prohibitive of implementing Complete Streets measures. Possible exceptions, meaning this is a partial list. The very next sentence says, this is intended to be an exhaustive list. So the way I read this, these two lines contradict one another. So my suggestion would be one of two things. We either delete the word possible, which means that this is an exhaustive list, which means that we are now bound basically in this policy to these four items, or we delete the last line that says this is intended to be an exhaustive list.
If you want to talk, or Shaz, go ahead.
Well, I'll just say, as you wish.
Chaz McQuarrie, member of Muscle Pad. Previous speakers have said, we strongly support implementation of a complete streets policy. In fact, I mean, I would say it's it's essentially essential for any community in the modern day to have a policy like this. I mean, you're considered a dinosaur if you don't, quite frankly. I would look to other communities in our area, particularly to the north in Washoe County, where they've done a lot of good work on making their streets more accessible to pedestrians and bicyclists through a complete streets policy and a mechanism called a street diet, where they actually take the opportunity when, as Patrick mentioned, streets are maintained with a slurry seal or an over, some sort of covering up the existing striping, the opportunity to assess what lanes are truly needed in the way of traffic lanes and whether they can introduce additional facilities without changing the basic infrastructure, the curves, the sidewalks, but create bike lanes and safe transportation corridors for bicyclists. So I would suggest that maybe there's a little bit of work to do on item 4 in that exceptions list to maybe recognize that in that that exception. I would also point out that the city has a transportation plan. It has various elements, bicycle and pedestrian elements, and this is really just an extension of that sort of thing. That's how city policy and planning take place, is you have documents like this that give guidance. And this is just the first step, and what's really important once we get the wordsmithing taken care of, I would say here, is that we actually move forward as quickly as possible to put the teeth in the thing, which is developing street standards within city codes and other code changes that may be appropriate to actually get it down on paper so that as developments come forward in the future, we're not relying on the goodwill of the developer, but we're relying on the good sense of the community and the Transportation Commission and the citizens in making guidelines that are more than just guidelines that make it implementable as it goes forward.
So. Chaz, is it your view that this document is for all streets in Carson City, or is this a disguised implementation of Carson Street and narrowing it? You use the word street diet, which scares me.
Street diet is a term that you could apply to taking two lanes of vehicles in one direction and reducing it to one and doing something else with the space that's made available by that. But there's all sorts of combinations of that. I mean, you look at each particular street in the environment and the circumstance that it's in, and you take into account a whole bunch of things, traffic being one, but also, access points onto the street, the type of things that are on the side, whether that's residential, commercial, industrial, et cetera, et cetera. So you can have a policy, but you still need to analyze a particular situation to come up with the best solution, and that's where staff can use guidelines to arrive at that point. And I think Roop Street, the improvements to Roop Street, were a good example, because we started off with more lanes and no bicycles lanes, and then through a process where, as Courtney said, we came and talked to a bunch of people, we got that changed for the better. It happens to be bike month. I've been riding my bike a little bit more than I usually do, maybe. So I have, in fact, ridden the length of Roop Street a couple of times and the length of Curry Street a couple of times, and there's just this vast difference between the pieces that have been improved and have bike lanes, and you get to little choke points that haven't been improved, and you're back in a traffic lane again. And I think what the intent of this is that it's a guidance document that says, well, if we go forward with the next phase of widening Roof Street, for example, then you would take this into account, and in the final plans and the development of the configuration for that, you would look to this document for guidance. I mean, I think that's what we're talking about here. It doesn't mandate that every time Patrick puts in a new sidewalk that you go through, you automatically have to do a whole bunch of X, Y, Z things. It's guidance that says, well, they're going to consider, the city's going to consider these things, and if they, to use Patrick's word, make sense, then they'll get implemented. And there's going to be gray areas. There always are. But I think going forward, it's really important that the city adopts a complete streets policy. And I think, we could maybe work on a few of the wording in a few sections here, but I think I would really encourage the board to go forward with adopting the policy. I think it's important.
This is just, in looking through this, and I'm sitting here listening to this and concerns voiced and things of this nature, policies, procedures, I think, are kind of on, you know, like Chaz just said, it's for guidance. But in looking at page 6, it basically, to me, it says it right here, that the steps of implementation of this policy, the four steps, but the last page it says, in addition, these four steps can and should be worked on simultaneously. They also require continuous action or refinement as plans, design standards, knowledge, and technology are updated and improved upon. So in my mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, this will be a constantly evolving policy with the guidelines that, you know, like was just mentioned, if some road is widened, that they need to take this policy into consideration. Am I right?
Yeah, that was kind of the intent, you know, just realizing that I don't think we're going to pull this out every year and kind of reevaluate the wording, but basically this is kind of the stepping stone into to realize that this whole process is kind of evolving, and then we need to continue to look, like, for example, at our design standards or some of these other things where, you know, as you find that other communities are implementing something new and say, hey, this is working out really well. Well, this is something we need to consider, you know, and try it out here and see if it we get the same result. That basically sums it up.
Chaz or Ann, has Muscle Power done any, like, sufficiency ratings in Carson City based upon your assessment or observations of what we might call hotspot areas or something like that for bicycles? I know, Ann, you were talking about your trip over here and the spooey and all the rest of that stuff. Do you have a map or do you have any information where you have red areas and green areas or whatever, the really bad areas and that would help us understand when you look at this policy and you start to implement the policy, you can say, okay, this is one of the Muscle Power's real priority areas or something like that?
Well, as an all-volunteer group, we don't really have we can't do that. But I think that we have a lot of, because we ride our bikes a lot and walk, we have a lot of knowledge about where the choke points are. We could probably easily sit down with Patrick and Daniel and a map and do some process to get those red circled or whatever you want to do. I would say, too, that I think that Patrick and Daniel have a pretty good idea themselves as the staff. But we would certainly love to work with them on fixing some of the most dangerous spots.
I can't see implementing a policy without having data. I mean, really.
And that has been an issue with bicycle and pedestrian policy so far, although there are a lot of jurisdictions that are working to address it, is bicycle and pedestrian levels of service and types of service, because as you all know, it used to be that we would just measure the automobile levels of service, but there are jurisdictions that are now measuring the bicycle and pedestrian levels of service, and it has a lot to do with not so much with the number of vehicles that are there, but it has to do with safety primarily and convenience. And I think that Patrick is familiar with a lot of those strategies and techniques. I don't think that he has been able to get very far into it here, though.
Thank you, ma'am.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could just add real quick, that's why we kind of included a performance measures section, because you kind of got to start somewhere, you know, and it's not only to just tally what improvements are done, but also to kind of go back and evaluate how those improvements are working, and then you have a baseline for comparison.
I'll bring it back to the board in a second. Before you do that, I'd like to ask Mr. Burnham if there's anything in here that would cause heartburn with NDOT as to South Carson Street, if and when they ever finish paving the freeway,
and we start based on our discussions with NDOT, it's pretty consistent with what they're planning and what we have been planning for that corridor in the future. So I think we're probably fine.
I'll bring it back to the commission then. What's your pleasure?
I move to adopt the Carson City Complete Streets policy for implementation by city staff with one correction, which is to delete the words, "This is intended to be an exhaustive list," on page 3 in the first paragraph under exceptions.
I'll second it. It's been moved and seconded. Any commission discussion? Any public discussion on the motion or the item? Seeing none, hearing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Next item on the agenda, Patrick, is?
Thank you, and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Burnham.
G1.
This is just an informative item. We're bringing you the budgets for the Transit Fund, the Campo Fund, Regional Transportation, Street Maintenance. These budgets have been adopted in as a draft or a tentative budget by the Board of Supervisors, and we're bringing them to you for you, basically for your edification. And the board will be considering it at a special meeting that they're required to do, I believe it's Monday on the 19th, for final adoption.
I think it's at 9 a.m.
I think so. That sounds right. 9? At any rate, the budgets are all fairly consistent with what we've been doing in the past. There's really no big divergent changes. I can say that the revenues have not... They are starting to stabilize, which is a good thing. We're starting to see a tiny bit of growth. It's not significant at all yet, but we saw a lot of volatility in the streets and RTC fund, especially over the last several years, but now we're starting to see a tiny bit of growth. So it tells us that it's starting to stabilize and maybe even coming back a tiny bit. Probably the only significant change, and it's not real significant, is we increased in the streets maintenance fund. We increased capital outlay for replacing some equipment. We're replacing a signal maintenance truck, a sign and paint truck, and part of a water truck. They fund it jointly with the other funds. Those are the really only big changes. Basically, it's a continued maintenance operation for streets, about $1.5 million going into asphalt. So if you've got questions, or I can certainly elaborate. And certainly Patrick knows the transit fund better and Dan better than I do even.
Any questions, Jim?
I just have one quick question on the special revenue fund for the Carson City Transit, which would be the first exhibit.
One moment, please.
It kind of looks like this, the fiscal summary?
Yes. So we're on fiscal summary of Special Revenue Fund, Department 225, Carson City Transit. Got it.
Yes. So you have revenue, and you have expenditure. And looking in, 12-13 actual, 13-14 estimated, you get your revenue, mm-hmm. and then your expenditure is the same. So in essence, you're not spending more than what you're taking in. But you have net income in actual of negative $52,695 and an estimated for 13-14 of a plus $174,052. Where do those numbers come from if you have the same income and expense? You follow me?
Yeah, I'm following you. I'm just struggling to... I know how the budget works, but I'm trying to explain exactly how it would show up like this. Here. Let me see.
Fund balance, possibly?
Yes, definitely. The bottom shows... Yeah, your bottom shows fund balance, but I'm struggling. I mean, it's definitely true that there are years that you do have. Oh, I actually, where is that? Where is our 350? I'm just looking at individual line items, for example.
I'm just trying to figure out how you end up with a loss and then a big gain the next year, estimated.
The ending fund balance is above the line in expenditures, and that's the difference, I believe.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
Right.
Yeah, I know how it works. I'm struggling as why I would, you know, to interpret what's interprets what's in front of us here. Let's see, source supplies.
Why are you playing with that one?
I have a different one
for Mr. Burnham.
Yeah, go ahead.
Since Mr. Burnham is going to be moving on and we're going to lose his expertise, the road diet comment that came up earlier, and this has to do with money because it saves the transportation funds. If we don't get additional revenue through the current taxes or nothing that happens and we still remain $1.something million short every year in road maintenance, street maintenance funds, would it be practical to start reducing the size of the roads and maybe one-way roads and that sort of thing so we have more concentrated traffic and focused traffic?
We're going to have to, if we don't see additional revenues in the future, the reality is that our street maintenance level was continued to erode as we've, you know, when you look at the level of all the streets combined. And so we're going to have to find some mechanism in order to stabilize that. And that certainly would be one way. Reducing the size of streets is very expensive. I mean, it's because but maybe that's the reality, is you've got to look at that, because what you're trying to do is reduce the cost of asphalt and the maintenance of that asphalt and the amount of asphalt you have. And it may be that some streets we're going to have to look at doing something different with them, like grindings or those kind of things. You know, we've talked a long time ago, several years ago, when we were doing a bunch of streets, Salomon varies on the very south of town, of potentially reducing that to a two-lane street because it carries no traffic. It was originally planned to be a different kind of street, and it's functioning, but that was a street that it easily could carry two streets. So those are the kinds of things you have to do, and you would do it over a long period of time in order to accomplish that. We'll have to do something if we can obtain some additional funding at some point in the future. I mean, you know, and every year we go down a little. It's a very incremental process as the level of money that we're not spending, you know, it has its toll over time. You know, how long is that? It's hard to say. I mean, we are taking a look at having the UNR, some pavement professors in UNR looking at our streets. They're going to be doing that this summer, and looking at our ceiling program and whether or not we should do something different instead of where we seal eighth of the city every year. It may be more effective and try to extend the life of some of the streets in a different manner. So we're going to take a look at our ceiling program as a part of this whole process, and we'll be reporting back to you probably by fall, I suspect, as we start looking at new budgets again. So
as of right now, are we remiss in not starting to make plans to deal with streets? Here's my theory. The cost of oil is going to go up, and we either have to find new money to pay for that oil, or we have to reduce the volume of oil we put on the ground.
Right. That's pretty much it.
Should we start studying how to put less oil on the ground now, or do you think we're at a critical point?
I think that's the point of our starting to work with UNR in order to try to look at the maintenance operations that we've been doing in the past. Can we do it in a different manner and get more bang for our buck? That's the point of going through that process. And I think they're starting in June or so.
this is on the agenda anyway. Next month we expect to bring an interlocal agreement between us and the university before you for approval. Right. So that I think we're going to start. I don't know if it's after that meeting or July 1st. But
In 2016, I think we've talked about it before, that there's likely to be a ballot issue statewide for indexing of gas taxes. And it'll include local government as well, based on the knowledge we have right now. But so we'll see how that goes. That's, you know, 2016. That's still a couple years away. But, you know, it's a start there. If that fails, then we're going to have to look at, you know, other opportunities. And, you know, I mean, there's not great options out there. You know, Douglas County decided, what, last year to fund about $1 million
out of their general fund
for streets. I mean, that's an opportunity, but we know the our general fund's strapped like crazy, so I don't see $1 million coming out of that anytime soon. We'd have to change priorities of what we do in the city. So, yeah, I think the streets is a big issue coming in the future. But when we need to start looking at it now, and I think that's why the UNR study that we're looking at really makes some sense. See what happens in 2016. But we're at some point we're going to have to start thinking of reducing our cost.
Should we not allow them to pave those streets? Should we require that community to have a tax to maintain their own streets? Because we've had people come to us and actually hire street maintenance people,
right,
at their own dime to keep the streets how they want them.
Yeah, I mean, those are some things that we might want to consider in the future. I don't know that it would be we need to do that yet. You know, some of the things we've talked about as part of the corridor projects that we're doing is that we want a maintenance mechanism as part of that before we actually fund those. So we've got to start thinking along those terms for a lot of these things. You know, and one of the costs of the freeway is we're maintaining the landscaping for the freeway. That's a new cost that we didn't have before. And that's, you know, it's not insignificant, but that's not a huge amount of money, but it's, nevertheless, it's money that's not going into asphalt. We're maintaining plants. So,
yeah, we always find the money to do it, but we never find the money to maintain it. Joe is rolling around over there having a fit. So are we back on the budget item?
Are you having a fit, Joe, or can I say one thing?
Joe works from DA's office. I'm not having a fit.
Okay, just make sure. Go ahead. I was just going to add one thing to Andy's comment about 2016 being very important is absolutely true, and important leading up to that is the next legislative session here in the state. As far as there's already something on the books that will have a vote, votes plural in 2016. There's a lot of talk about changing that in the next legislative session, so it'll be important to see and to participate in what will happen at that time.
Did you figure out, Mr. Schwartz?
Yes, with help, embarrassingly, admittedly. Yes, I knew it had to be something with the beginning balance. So, for example, if you look the beginning fund balance listed on the fifth line down in 13-14 was $121,070. You have a net income below the third line from the bottom, $174,052. Those added together will then are forecast to become the beginning balance in 2014-15 of $295,122. What you're seeing here is that the story for this is that 2013-14, the fiscal year that we're in right now, and I shared this with my staff, you know, a year ago or a little more ago, we had, you know, the change in Medicaid as far as new riders and there were some doom and gloom there, and what we did is we were able just recently, as we shared with you, to recover some money from state Medicaid. We were able to get a new funding source called 5310, which actually gave us 80% instead of 50% reimbursement for some of our monies. So with some of the doom and gloom that we had, you know, we're looking for every opportunity we can. We actually did have a better year financially this year than we forecast. We're not
we're not, you know, planning on any new surprises next year, so we have a slight decline. But the good news is that this fiscal year we actually did better than we expected to. Had some good turns of events, and we're going to have a larger fund balance than actually expected. So, positive result of this year.
Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, so I understand, you know, how that carries and stuff like that. But this is on the city transit, and you're showing the beginning fund balance, ending fund balance, and how it carries over to the next year mm-hmm. based on actual. How come that's not happening in the other ones, or it is, but there's not showing any, you know, deficit in the net income when their actuality is? You know, you've got, you go to the RTC, Department 250. You know, you got your revenues and your expenses, and they balance out, every one of them. And, you know, you look at the estimated, you had the beginning balance of $785,000, and the ending fund balance is $150,000. So I'm just curious as to why they all the other ones of the budgets completely equal out, but this one shows actual.
Because that doesn't make much sense to me. It yeah. seems odd. You're right. Because the other ones do work.
Yeah.
So we'll check with finance to make sure.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any public comment? Seeing none, this is an information-only item. Let's move on to item G1, G2, G3. Street operation report, project status report, and future agenda items.
We're continuing on our crack seal operations that are happening in a portion of the city that is expected to have slurry seal later on this summer. We are getting some sidewalk work done, but I think that's all that's really of note in the operations report. The project status report, the Hells Bells Road sidewalk improvements are unfortunately they're still 100% design, and we are expecting a notice to proceed. Gotta look over there. It's just between NDOT and Federal Highway Administration more. It's not the fault of anyone in this room. But we're waiting for a notice to proceed, and for the record. And she just started.
she's been here a whole 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is the middle of week two. But we're waiting for our notice to proceed, and we're hoping, getting your fingers crossed here, that we can have it before you for action to award a contract at the July meeting. The worst case is August meeting. But we're just so close. The Vista Grande Boulevard, you know, reconstruction, otherwise known as the Costco Winter Tie. That project is well underway now, and they're turning lots of dirt and putting lots of pipe in the ground. And from our perspective, about $130,000 of the cost is coming out of FTA funds, provide pedestrian connections to transit stops and the like, and improve the frontage along that road. And from a pavement perspective, Vista Grande was in extremely poor condition, and it's going to be much better, obviously new when it's done. The Fairview Drive safety meeting, we told you that we thought we'd have temperatures in May. The beginning of May, we didn't have temperatures, but we think we'll have it by the end of the month. So we're talking to contractors. They're getting a submittal so we can go out there and put that median in for safety purposes.
Will that work be done at night?
Yes, that work will be done at night. That's the temperature restriction. We have plenty of temperatures in the middle of the day today, but we didn't think it was a good idea. So we're watching the nighttime temperatures. The east-west water transmission main, we opened bids on that just last week, and that project is going forward. Dan, do you know when the start date is for that?
Late in the month, early June.
Late month, yeah. That one's coming. It's a significant project. It has the route that goes through the park certainly minimizes traffic impacts, but there will still be some.
Let's see. We're still in design on the East 5th Street pedestrian improvements. The Woodside Drive improvements, I believe, got underway today. The next two, William Street, Route 50 path improvements and Western Nevada College sidewalk improvements, were actually, we executed that agreement last month at this meeting, and we're just waiting for the notice to proceed, this time not for construction but for design. The Silver Sage Drive sidewalk improvements are well underway. Out in the field there, we don't expect it to be a real long project, but that fills in a significant gap that previously existed in the sidewalk network. And the slurry seal micro paving and traffic line, long line striping projects are being developed to be put out to bid and brought before you for award. Future agenda items. I wrote a couple down. Couple of them, we've got a small agreement with state Medicaid on related to transportation Medicaid patients on Jack, and also we plan to bring before you, as we mentioned previously, the UNR, an agreement with UNR for pavement management services with them to help us work on our program. And I won't be here next month. Dan will be here. I presume Darren will be here. I'm just going to mention that Andy's official last day is going to happen prior to the next meeting.
15 days.
Right. 15, who's counting? And I'll only give you a very brief, I think, one of my many fond memories of Andy. I can tell you it was May 31st. It was a special meeting, and I rode my bike to work that day, and I crashed badly, and I was bleeding and all sorts of good things. And I remember sitting here next to Andy and him having a good chuckle at me because I was bleeding right through all my bandages, and even though I was bleeding through my bandages, I had to laugh along with Andy because you can't resist. It didn't matter. You just you got to laugh with Andy, and I very much appreciate being able to work with him and with the RTC for the last almost 8 years. So thank you, Andy.
I'd like to make similar comments. Andy and I had battles when I was on the school board over what do you call it now, Stewart, where they took the part of Corbett School, and I mean, I thought that project would never get started, and yeah, it took, I don't know how long it took.
It took way too long.
And the school has the property. We traded the property for them. It worked out well in the end. It's just, it took, it seemed like it took 5 years to get that one done. But yeah, we've built a lot of projects since I've been around here.
Yeah. A lot of good projects. And, well, I'm sure we'll drag you in front of the board before you leave. And
I have to be there tomorrow, and then I know that after that. So
okay. Well, I just want to thank you for working so hard for Carson City and working so smart, because actually we're in fairly good shape.
Yeah. You know, I'm proud of what we were able to accomplish over the years, and I'm going to stay around and help Darren a little bit, you know, as he needs me over the next period of time as well. When he needs, when he calls, I'll come hopping. So,
any other comments from the commissioners? Any public comment? Any motions to adjourn?
Yes.
Hearing done, I guess we'll stay all night.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, leave.
Aye, aye.